Osborne. The song is Mystery. Mystery, you are alive. I feel you all around. You are the fire in my heart. You are the holy sound. You are all of life. Cathedral in 1983, and it was still to date the largest gathering in the history of that cathedral. Wow. We had about 800 inside and about 600 outside. Wow. So it was sort of, for me anyway, kind of the beginning of environmental spirituality in Seattle. It was sort of stunning to see, because we did the Earth Mass as a Eucharist, you know, with the wolf sounds and the elephant screams, and it was just. But anyway, that's Susan Osborne. Oh, mystery, you are alive. I feel you all around. You are the fire in my heart. And the whole song goes from the creation of mountains and the seas and the tender touch of a lover and the touch of a child's hand. I feel you all around. Grant that I may see you in always and everything. Grant that I may see you always and everything. So the theme for today is mystery, spirituality. Spirituality in midlife, taking on the mystery of things. I'm Carla Prime. I think I know most of you. Any of you here to Holden for the first time, or to your old home nights, or some of you maybe in this class for the first time. Have you, anyone come into the village today? No? You're all, you came into the village today. Wow, you're taking a class. Good for you. Welcome. Where'd you come from?
California.
Whereabouts?
Auburn.
Great. Well, welcome. Nice to see you. We're kind of on the last of a 5-session class, but I'm delighted to hear.
I was told the last day was the important day.
So. Oh, well, I know. It's kind of
all will be revealed. So
and you're new today, too. Did you just come in? Welcome. Where'd you come from?
Seattle.
From Seattle. Yay. Welcome. So, not too far. So, we've been sort of playing all week with this notion of spirituality in midlife. I've had some people come in and say, am I too old for this class? And then other people come in and say, am I too young for this class? But this really is a class, to some degree, about being a human being, and it's about living through time. Those of us who are set somewhere between our late 30s to mid-60s have some things in common. Often we may have grown children, we may have parents who are alive who are needing our care, we may be experiencing changes in our own bodies that we haven't had to face before. So there's some commonalities of roughly midlife that many of us experience, but a lot of what we've been talking about this week really is about the longing for God and about the desire to grow in, as Paul says, maturity, full maturity in Christ. And so that's really what we've been about. And so today I will try to summarize some themes that we've been doing, either stated or implied. The theme really today is mystery, because I think one of the things that I certainly experience the older I get is that the mystery of life becomes richer, more deep, more provocative, more humbling. And I get more curious. That's a favorite word of one of my yoga teachers, and it's great for yoga and it's great for life. Can we get more curious as we get older? Can we get better accustomed to suspending our judgments no matter where we are on the Myers-Briggs scale? Can we learn to shut our mouth a little bit off more often and listen really attentively? Can we find ways to live deeply into the present moment? As we were saying yesterday when we were talking about bodies and toward the end of the class, with Shannon's help, we learned about energy work and ways that disciplines, very ancient disciplines like yoga and tai chi and work like Reiki can give us some tools for helping us to use the physical body not as an impediment to God, not something over which we hope we can leap to get to God, but the body really as a tremendous gift of God in part and specifically to grow closer to God, to grow closer to the mystery of life and of our own individuality. So mystery is kind of the overall theme. I love this quote from King Lear. So we'll live and pray and sing and tell old tales and laugh at gilded butterflies and hear poor rogues talk of court news, and we'll talk with them too. Who loses and who wins, who's in and who's out, and take upon us the mystery of things as if we were God's spies. So that's sort of the theme. What does it mean to take upon us the mystery of things? Almost someone the other day, first day, was talking about knitting a prayer shawl. I sort of have this image of having a shawl draped on our lovely bodies, the mystery of the universe, the stars in the sky, the mountains, and the ancientness of this planet and the immensity of the universe and the equal immensity of the human spirit and of God's presence in our life. As I have every day, I put up sort of what I hope are provocative or interesting or fun things to think about. For all that has been, thank you. For all that will be, yes. Don Harmerschold, and probably Holdenites can tell me whether I've spelt the last name correctly. I'm in a Nordic house here. For all that has been, thank you. For all that will be, yes. I couldn't have said that at 30. The present moment becomes the communion bread that is broken to reveal the presence of Christ, Summum Kip. And this came from some hymn I sung years ago, and I can't remember, from the Episcopal Hymnal 86, but it's stuck in my head. Grace sufficient for life's day. Isn't that a great expression? Grace sufficient for life's day. Psalm 51, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Take not your Holy Spirit from me. The Episcopal Church, anyway, do you Lutherans do this in Lent? Mm-hmm. It's just sort of that prayer of supplication. And I find that one of the gifts of growing older is prayer, if not coming more naturally to me, becomes more fervent. And scripture passages or prayers that I may have heard or said all of a sudden take on a ping of meaning that sometimes can startle me. Has that ever happened to you? Do you, as you've gotten older, is there a prayer or a scripture passage that hits you between the eyes now that didn't when you were younger? Any of you, give me an example. Anybody?
The 23rd Psalm. I mean, I've known it all my life, but still, it seems like it takes on a different meaning now and more of a meaning.
Yeah. Feel it more in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 23rd Psalm. Anyone else?
It had a lot of meaning in a foxhole. And I wasn't that old.
Right.
But through the valley of death.
I asked on the first day that a few people liked, so I put it back up. What have you known all your life? What have you known all your life? So I'm going to open. favorite prayer and a song that I, well, there'll be a lot of prayers in today. A lot of prayer and a lot of poetry. For me, prayer and poetry is almost synonymous. Good poetry, although I'm going to share with you two poems that are not from famous poets at all. I firmly believe we're all poets. All of you are poets. The deeper we live in the life, the more the poems start coming out of us. And remember, they don't have to be good. They just have to be yours and come from your experience. So this is a favorite prayer. Talk about prayer even all over your life. Thomas Merton, I was shown this by Henry Nouwen, who was a professor of mine at seminary of blessed memory, and in his course, Spirituality for Ministry. And it's by Thomas Merton. And if, as I read it, you recognize it, raise your hand. But I've been carrying this around since 1976. Thomas Merton. I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think that I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope that I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, will I trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. Thomas Merton. Perhaps you have prayers that you've carried with you for years. Any of you, do you have favorite prayers that are in your wallets or in your journals and they still feel good decades later? Yes, sir.
Well, without trying to be today a smart aleck or anything, I have a group of people that do Bible study with me at home once a week, and they're all widows except for one or two men. And my wife, she's not a widow yet. And they're pretty well agreed that their favorite prayers are help me, help me, help me, and thank you, thank you, thank you, which you recognize for Plan B, I think.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And because I have a job every day with children, kindergartners through 12th grade, as a bus driver, I find that the easiest way for me to enjoy that work, that time, is to just have it as a time of prayer. The minute I get there until I go home. I have to do it twice a day because you have to take them to school and then you have to take them back home.
Thank you. Yeah, he's referring to, I blanked out on her name.
Annie
Lamont Dreadlocks.
Yes, yeah.
The two summaries of most of our prayers are help me, help me, help me, and thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for that. I love that image of you on the school bus. A little later, we're going to talk more about prayer life, and about, we've been using the image of a wisdom trellis as, for me, a very provocative image of a structure which allows for growth that we aim by the grace of God to move in certain directions. As we get to this point in our life, we realize that it really is up to us where we are going to some degree. The choices in the areas that we actually do have choice are really important. Synonym for that is rule of life, a very common term in spiritual direction in the last 10 years. Rule sounds awfully rigid to me and a little overly clear, and I like somehow the idea of a trellis because it implies flowering and growing things. Another theme we've had all week is that this really is, in many ways, the best part of our life in many ways. For all kinds of reasons that many of you have been identifying all week, in the midst even of losses and bodily changes, and as Wendell Berry puts it, the forethought of grief. There's grief, and then at our age, there's the forethought of grief, which is almost worse, and we have that as well. Nonetheless, we've learned some things along the way, and they are valuable. And so I'm going to play the song that I played. It's a short song. At the very beginning, and I hope those of you that first time will like it the second time, and those that you haven't heard have it will enjoy it. And it's called May I Suggest.
May I suggest, may I suggest to you, may I suggest this is the best part of your life. May I suggest, this time is blessed for you, this time is blessed and shining almost blinding bright. Just turn your head and you'll begin to see the thousand reasons that were just beyond your sight. The reasons why I suggest to you, why I suggest this is the best part of your life. There is a world that's been addressed to you, addressed to you, intended only for your eyes. A secret world, a treasure chest to you, a private scenes and brilliant dreams that mesmerize. A tender lover's smile, a tiny baby's hands, the million stars that fill the turning sky at night. Oh, I suggest, yes, I suggest to you, yes, I suggest this is the best part of your life. There is a hope that's been expressed in you, the hope of seven generations, maybe more. This is the faith that they invest in you. It's that you'll do one better than was done before. Inside you know, inside you understand, inside you know what's yours to finally set right. And I suggest to you, and I suggest this is the best part of your life. This is a song, comes from the west to you, comes from the west, comes from the slowly setting sun. This is a song with a request of you, to see how very short the endless days will run. And when they're gone, and when the dark descends, we'd give anything for one more hour of light. May I suggest, this is the best part of your life.
There is the best version of Wayfaring Stranger I've ever heard. We heard a very good version of it the other night, but they do some, they also do another one with biblical reference, Keep Your Lamp Trimmed and Burning. And then they do some original songs as well, but it's a great, great group. So some of the themes that little song picks up, the sense that, you know, many generations have prayed and hoped and worked for the life that we are living. Some of us are, I'm a first generation child of an immigrant. I don't know how far back some of your immigrant parents go, but we are a country full of people that came here with dreams, often from very difficult lives elsewhere. And sometimes when we're in a self-centered place, we forget just how much hope has gone into the lives that we've led, that we've been privileged to lead many of us. I just love that song. And it sort of forces you, it invites you to live deeply in the present moment and not to waste a moment's time in nostalgia or bitterness or the kinds of things that are like a tide going out that suck us back and suck our energy back, that invite us in the wrong direction in life. Anything that can invite us into the present moment and the gift of the present moment is, I think, of God. So just some general thing. We talked about initially waking up. Our second class was embracing our sorrows. The third one was savoring our blessings, with the real insight that a lot of our deepest blessings are also connected to our greatest sorrows. They're placed there. There's the sides of the same coin. The people that we loved are also the people that we may have to watch age and die. The very people from whom we've received many gifts are the ones that, when those relationships are in jeopardy, it's very difficult. And then yesterday we had a lot of fun talking about bodies and other households, really taking seriously that the gift of body, the gift of mortality, and the gift of living in time for however long that is the central medium of God's incarnating love in our life. And that time itself, which the physicists say we experience in a very small way compared to the reality of the universe, nonetheless, that is the way that God chooses to reveal God's self to us, and that it is a gift. It's a time of surrender. It's also a time, I love the phrase from one of the hymns, wonder, love, and praise. It's a time in our life that wonder might really begin to increase, even if we don't have grandchildren to play with, but especially any work with small children can remind us of how wonder-filled life is, and perhaps even be a door for us to some of the best parts of our childhood. If any of you were privileged to have even a taste of a happy childhood, a place that was safe, a place that you could play, a place that you could dream. I was walking over here, and for about 3 minutes, I watched a little girl watch deer. You know, completely content, completely transfixed, as I was at that age, and as I hope I am at this age. So the gift of retrieving and reliving and savoring the memories of childhood and recognizing that 5-year-old is still alive in us, is still very much there and can be a well of living water. And that even as a 56 or a 76-year-old, staring at a deer can bring an even more powerful sense of delight, because we're not 5, we're 75. And treasure and savor that experience. So one of the assumptions that's been, as I said, at the heart of what I think I've been hoping to do and we've done together is the naming of the fact that we've not only lived a while, but we've learned some valuable things along the way. So what I'd like to do for a few minutes is invite you to break up into groups of 2 or 3 and tell your brothers and sisters something valuable, something of value to you that you know now, that you didn't know when you were younger, and that you're really glad that you know now. It may be some insight, it may be a skill, it may, who knows. But please share that. So something that is valuable to you, that's only come to you relatively later in life, that you didn't have or know when you were younger, and it's precious to you. Does that make sense? So should we do that for about 5 minutes? Just find another person or two?
No.
Namaste, and thank you to whoever. whoever you talk to, because they've shared something of their life with you. So what did you either hear someone say or hear yourself say that seemed wise and true about what have you learned that's true that you didn't know when you were younger, that you do know now, and that you're so glad you know about being a human being in God's world? So anyway.
I didn't really believe patience was a virtue.
Why not?
Because I didn't have much. But I wanted it now.
And why do you know it's a virtue now?
Oh, because things slow down a little bit. I don't have to make $1 million. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. I get to do what I choose to do unless my wife's in the room. Pretty much. Same wife as yesterday.
Well, you're taking a lot this week. I definitely.
Well, I'm old and she has to forgive me and love me. It's a deal.
All right, patience. Anyone else? Thank you. Please, in the back.
I heard that the fear that we felt our whole lives that we might have accumulated from our parents shouldn't be as much of a barrier as we have let it be. And you can let go of that fear and explore things that didn't match it. Yes, when you're 5, your mother doesn't want you to cross the street. Well, you can make those decisions on a more mature basis.
Fear that we picked up from our parents, other things that we, as a young child, that was just part of what the real world was, and getting old enough to have some perspective and say, you know, that was theirs, and they probably needed that. That doesn't have to be me.
I think I have the opposite.
Yes.
The faith I got from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that you don't sit back and not try to help people, because they did. Even though my mom was very ill, my whole life that she was alive, they still tried. So I don't think it was the fear I got, it was the faith that I saw demonstrated in their lives.
And in most of our relationship with our parents, living or dead, we can recognize those things which we don't choose to imitate and become conscious of them. And we become conscious of those things which, boy, thank you for showing me that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mom, wherever she is. You know, you can always say thank you, your mom.
I learned a simple thing that, and this might be not pertaining to what you're saying, but in Spokane, we have a lot of panhandlers, and people get really upset with them and stuff, and I'm not judgmental because I remember my father, give him a nickel, you never know, give him, I don't remember him saying a nickel all the time, but he always gave people change and money. Not that we were wealthy and we didn't have a lot, but help the other person. And I always felt when I see them, regardless of what they might appear to be, you never, ever know. Some people maybe do know, but I never know. I mean, I will always keep changing my car, and I hand it to them. And I know some people think that's wrong, but I don't know. I've given them bananas before, whatever I have. I always do. And I've had one guy say, I think I only had 45 cents one time. He said, that won't buy me a can of soup. Well, if it's a smoking eat, we'll buy you one maybe. I don't know. I didn't care. But 45 cents you didn't have a minute ago.
Thank you.
But I do. I give them money.
Thank you.
Maybe it's a bunch of drug addicts. I don't know, but no. Drug world,
it's
right
not
now.
For you to know or to judge.
Yeah.
Other people, something that you know now that you're glad that you didn't know when you were younger. Yes.
My parents, my father, you know, we were to be seen, not heard. So we were never talked to. I never remember my parents talking to me, asking me, do you like this or do you like that or do you want to do this? So because of that, my husband and I have worked very hard to be friends with our 3 sons. And at various times, they are our best friends, and they like to be with us, and we like to be with them, and that was never the way with my parents.
I think that's a gift that you're giving your children, and they're giving to you.
forgiveness, relationships, mending fences while we can.
Mm-hmm.
And the courage it takes and the maturity it takes, the grace it takes, the risk it takes to do that.
I've got some real problems that I'm going to talk over with God. I've tried talking and the answer hasn't came, but I don't know why he had this plan that involved evil. I don't think he created evil, but it's here. I mean, yes, it's nice that he forgives our evil ways, but couldn't he have just said, all you guys be nice? I know it would be a limiting free will, but did we really need free will? Seems like some of the decisions I made could have been made by somebody a lot smarter than me, you know?
Part of the mystery, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the big questions that we maybe started asking 30 years ago, they don't go away.
No.
But how do we deal with these big, I mean, I want to go to Terry Fredheim and say, okay, so what's the deal?
Yeah.
You know?
Have faith. Well,
what's the deal?
Okay.
You know, tell me what the Bible says. I remember one of my favorite professors in the seminary was Paul Holmer, a great C.S. Lewis and Kierkegaard scholar. And he was very ill, and as it turned out, a few months away from his dying. And a friend of mine who was a doctoral student who was a friend to him said that Paul Holmer said, you know, I've just been waiting to read the one book. Kind of the one book that would tell me what I need to know. And somehow that made me feel better as a 30-year-old. That, you know, you can be 70 years old and have read 4,000 books and you're not going to get it. And that's okay. You know, and how do we live into, Barbara Brown Taylor, wonderful. Any of you read her Episcopal priest and writer? She says that a part of life is to learn not just to focus on believing, but beholding. Which is sort of an interesting expression. Not that the believing part isn't bad. You'll always need that, those things that are clear and that are your boundaries and are your values. Very important. But there's also a dimension of life which is beholding. Kind of strong at the core and soft at the edges. You know, what are you willing to say, you know, I don't get it. I don't get it all. I'm not gonna make this all neat. But I do know some things, and I've heard many of you say them. Yes, sir.
Well, I think probably I have read roughly 400 books in the last maybe 10 years, each one of which at the time I was reading it, I thought is finally going to tell me what I really been looking for. Marcus Borg and John Dominic Cross.
Good guys.
You know, Anne Lamott and all of these people. And I think the one that I just finished came as close as any, and it's another woman author, Diana Butler Bass, and it's the style of Howard Zinn, A People's History of Christianity.
Yeah.
And the fact that she reveals so much that we never heard in Sunday school about what really went on, wow, it's a great read. Very, very easy, delightful, the way she writes, very easy to read.
And the thing we heard yesterday from you, I'm forgetting your name.
Gretchen,
that was so wise at the end of our class was beginning to trust that we were talking about belongings and the fear of losing stuff, that you lose self, the trust that we have what we need to know. It's great to read the books. It's great to have the experiences. It's great to sit with wise men and wise women. It's great to acknowledge the gifts we've received from our ancestors. But also trusting that, you know, especially as our minds begin to get less sharp, trusting that God is giving us at every moment, at every age in our life, what we need to love and to serve the Lord.
We don't need to know everything.
So I want to move on a little bit to talk more about prayer life, because that's sort of been implicit in a lot of what we've been doing is the intentionality about prayer and those other things in our life that help us to daily make the choices as best we can by the grace of God for those things which open our heart, which lead to trust, which lead to peace, which lead to joy in each day. And in the midst of the suffering that we are experiencing and will experience, to try to avoid those things and practices in our life which suck us back into patterns of the longer serve us and that sometimes are wrong. Robert Benson, a wonderful Southeastern writer, he said the three greatest impediments to the spiritual life: amnesia, inertia, and manana. The three greatest impediments to the spiritual life. Amnesia, inertia, and manana. How many of us have said, well, when I retire, or when it's Lent, or when I get over this illness, I'm really going to work on my prayer life, get a spiritual director, I mean, kind of fill it in. How many of us have said, well, later on I will. And we may really want to spend half an hour in silence today. We may desperately need it. And we may very consciously intend it. But something always is going to come in the way of that. So here's a funny poem that was written by a woman who doesn't write poetry very much. But it was, I was at a wonderful retreat put on by the United Methodists. And one of the things they did is over the 5-day period is that if you wrote something that you wanted to share, you just put it on the wall. And so this was put on a wall. And it's kind of funny. And it's along the lines of being in who you are and recognizing that this is the time that needs to make you laugh. It's called Body Song for Savoring. Enough is enough. It is way too much doing, thinking, producing, and thinking about doing more when it may be time to do less, be less, lessen. And here is the lesson. You have already produced more beauty, generosity, and work through one creative endeavor or another for several lifetimes, not to mention children you have raised, parents you have attended to, gardens you have planted, literally and metaphorically, and you have brought more people, projects, and passions to ripening than can be counted. You are past counting, and now it is time to be countless, and perhaps to be a countess. Relax into a place of knowing that you have already done enough, and now is the time to savor. Savor, savor all the ways you have worked with your whole heart and loved with your whole heart. Mothers, fathers, siblings, friends, children, lovers, spouses, and even those who have left your life through natural or unnatural causes. Accept all your luxurious beauty of soulfulness that has wrapped around those you have held in your heart, and all the efforts you have made to follow meaning in the world through work, words, worries, and wantings. Vibrate with all that is going through you, the rise and fall of internal waves, crushes of questions. Own both your shortcomings and accomplishments, which means to name and rename what you truly have done. Don't dismiss it in light of living into the unknown. Others, own all of your wonder. It is time for you to own it. Relinquish the need to be Superman or Superwoman. Have a funeral for doing too much. And celebrate not doing in some way. Enjoy being. My partner's just saying that. And know you are being formed into a wise one. And here's my favorite line. You are being called to drink from the cup of serene. Each gesture an act of love, a counteraction to a world of overdoing, an addiction to doing one more thing. When all along the love of the eyes, the way you behold who and what you love is the fragrance of the one who gave the beautiful scent of you. Isn't that a lovely poem? I mean, great art? No. But where's it coming from? Coming from an examined life. You don't have to be a great poet to write great poetry. You would have to take that time to sit in silence. You deserve it. You need it. You know that a few weeks of no silence, nothing that fuels your soul, what happens to you? Well, I'm a mess. I'm not going to look up at the person who knows that. You know, I find that as I get older, if I'm not doing some of my inner work, I get upset, I get depressed, I get pissed off quicker than I should. Sometimes my judgment isn't very good. Sometimes if if I keep doing one more thing, one more email, one more this, one more that, I start getting forgetful. I start losing stuff. You know, there are real trade-offs to not practicing your spiritual life, I find. At the bottom, I'm not me anymore, you know? Or I'm some of the worst bits of me. So taking the time, the tyranny of one more thing, how many of you know what that's like? Anyway, could you relate to this? What rang true for you and the woman named Celeste who wrote this on May 4th? What could you relate to?
Things you want to do, you don't always have time to do.
And that's a good observation. If there are things that you want to do that there isn't going to be time for, you're not going to do it. So that choosing and asking Spirit's guidance for what is it that I am called to do right now? What is my little light in the darkness? My work for the kingdom? My tears for the kingdom and my dance for the kingdom. What is it? Because you're right. There are things you want to do that aren't going to happen.
One time when we had two or three kids, I can't remember. But, I know how many we have.
No judgment.
We figured out that between the two of us, I mean, we were church council, choir practice, committee here, committee that in 1 month we were only home together three nights out of the month.
Plus we were both working full time.
We said...
that was the first year we were married.
We said, this isn't going to last if we don't do something about this. I mean, it's wonderful to have all these activities that we're helping and doing and all this stuff, but it's not helping her, and it's doing us in. So let's figure this out.
And I have a hard time saying no.
Yeah. You notice that when you retire? Oh, wouldn't you like to?
Since you're retired,
right.
Couldn't you?
Well, that's something that people say really mindlessly. They're usually not retired themselves. They make some assumptions. And one of the insights in the retirement a few days ago was, you know, the notion of the yin and the yang, and that when you're paying attention strongly to one area, it's natural and really okay that you're not doing these other things.
I'm retired.
Yes.
I can say no real easy.
Good. Have to learn that, or did you?
No, the guilt is heavy.
What made you learn that lesson?
Where am I going? What am I doing? Help.
What were you finding you didn't like about your life saying yes?
I wasn't being productive.
You weren't being productive.
I'm still not being productive. But then I'm thinking, well, maybe I am, and I don't know it.
Productive. Now, there's a word most of us grew up with.
And what good am I on the planet? What good am I doing on this planet?
The world.
Yeah.
The world has been here for billions of years. Our lifetime is like a little blink. I don't think we need to worry about it. The world's going to take care of itself, even if we're not doing it.
I guess when I think about the world and the planet, I'm thinking about maybe my environment, you know. Maybe I should be working on the church garden more often, but I don't want to do it. You know, that kind of thing.
And so what have you found that since you've been better able to say no?
I've been finding
that you're
what,
able
it's
to...
It's kind of okay. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. The guilt is still there. But, I mean, it depends on what it is, but I do feel... a sense of guilt for not helping more.
Bet some of you can relate.
Pass the guilt on to some younger people.
And we'll say no thank you.
Yeah. The guilt can be there if you say yes, and the guilt can be there if you say no.
If you choose to let it reside.
So deal with it.
That's all I'm saying.
The guilt for doing too much, and the guilt for doing too little.
So here's another good story. You know, it is often said that, and this is along the lines of taking time for planting our spiritual garden, journaling, praying, silence, movement, prayer, whatever. Theater a while ago who said that, you know, Brother Lawrence is often quoted, and rightly, as saying that, you know, doing the dishes in the monastery kitchen was as much an act of prayer as kneeling down in the church. And of course that's true, but the point the retreat leader made was very good. He said, but what's also true is that Brother Lawrence had been kneeling in front of the Blessed Sacrament for 45 years. And that's a very good insight. You know, of course it is a part of our prayer to feed the homeless, to plant a garden at the church, to, you can name the list, but it's also important to take that time, which really is devoted not to the work of our hands, however noble and holy, but to take the time as well just to offer ourselves to God. And so I'll wrap this up with a thought that another sort of antique word you don't hear much is the prayer of oblation or of offering. And for me, still one of the most powerful moments of the Eucharist is when the offerings come up to the altar. And they may include the monies representing our work, the bread and the wine, but sometimes other offerings will come up on the altar as well. And it, for me, just that the gesture of offering is a reminder that we're really offering a sacrifice of ourselves. We're offering the gift of ourselves is offered on the altar to God when we worship, or when we turn off the cell phone, the pager, the email, blah, 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 and sit down. Have any of you heard your cell phone this week? Every now and then I'll hear something and think, oh, it's my cell phone. You know? See what's happened to our brains? You know? Or I go, oh, I lost it. So we've gotten so attuned to our machines, and so I think the antidote to that even more in our generation is where do we find silence? And so many people in the workplace now, and particularly those that are younger, this is the norm. Do they ever have a day off? Do they ever have silence? Do they ever have a moment that they can't be working? I mean, the jury's out on what a 40-year career of working like this is going to do to people, but it would make me just nuts. I'm having a hard enough time. So, you know, the notion of the discipline of, you know, offering yourself to silence. Someone had their... Sure.
Well, the last question you written down there is probably the greatest question along that line that I've ever encountered. How do you do that? Anyway, what have you known all your life? That's a marvelous question.
What do you like about it?
Well, because I think that all my life I can remember back being a really little kid and having a lot of really neat privileges from my parents. They must have been, somehow they must have been given some insight or something, because they allowed me to do a lot of things that have been very helpful and instructive to me for all of my life. But what I have known all during that time is that God is real. There's all the talk from church and my family and everything about God. I have never had any doubt about that. I had a lot of doubts about how well I'm doing, you know, in the spiritual life and so on, but I've never had any doubt about the existence of God and the Spirit in the spiritual realm.
And He's with us all.
I have, you know, you touched a subject, because I never have either. When my children were growing up and they were raised, you know, in the old standard Lutheran thing, you really touched on something there, because my kids, they wanted to go to different churches and try different things, and my son is now practicing Catholic and stuff. But he would ask me questions. I just thought, I never doubted, ever, mm-hmm. ever. I think that's kind of an amazing in itself.
It's kind of amazing.
Did you have something?
Uh-huh.
You were just, your hair looks fine. I've known her 5 days.
This may sound a bit silly, but what I've known all my life is that I'm going to die.
And keep going. But have you really known that all your life?
Yeah.
I don't
well,
think I
you
know.
Maybe at age 5 or something, you know.
Well, on that happy note, I'm going to close. I'm going to close with a prayer that was on the desk of Carl Knurr. I'm sure none of you know, but he he was the diocesan stewardship officer for a number of years in the Diocese of Olympia, which is the Episcopal Church in Western Washington. And in his early 60s, I mean, he was 63, just as vital as can be. And on the day that we buried the bishop from two bishops ago, all of a sudden I opened up my email, Carl Kudark, rest in peace. He was pouring coffee for his wife one morning. Mm-hmm. And it sort of sent a wave. I'm sure this perhaps has happened in your communities. Sort of a wave throughout the diocesan community of a young man with who was in really good health, just suddenly died, probably an aneurysm. And he had a prayer by his desk that I will read. But I want, the reason I'm telling you the story and not just reading you the prayer is that he was the kind of guy that no matter which church he went to, talking about, you know, stewardship isn't everybody's favorite thing to hear about. It really isn't. But he always brought just a sense of his love of God in everything he did. You know, was he, you know, a PhD in some theology? Nah. But just the way, one thing he liked to quote is he used to say to people, for some people, you're the only Bible they're going to read. And he just had this marvelous way, whatever he was talking about. And it didn't have to be deep or profound or whatever, but it just, he sort of brought that presence of the love of God into the room everywhere he went. And the funeral was, I mean, everybody was in shock coming in. And here's the power of what your clergy do and you do with them on Sunday morning. We all came in just with this, you know, the shock on every, and the grief on everybody's faces. By the end of the service, we went out after the tributes and the music and the communion, and it was like New Orleans. You know, we were standing up, and for all the saints, you know, people were just, they were smiling, not because they weren't sad anymore, but because the power of the Spirit in that place, in the midst of that terrible shock, something happened in that 2 hours. And I'll never forget this, his wife, his widow, Susan, her three beautiful sons, they walked out carrying, she walked out carrying the ashes. People's tears streaming down their faces. And you know what she did? I've never seen this. She sort of would show the ashes to them, as if to say, yeah, he's yours. So she came in with that deep, deep grief, and she'll have that grief, but she went out with that. So I invite you as I say this prayer that was by his desk to remember such a person in your life. That might be a parent or a teacher, maybe one of your children, maybe someone from Holden Village, that for you just being in their presence brought the Spirit of God to you. You know, you got it. That was the theme of the bishop's sermon. He got it. So I invite you to invite that person's presence into you, and to recognize that there's also you, that every one of you is that kind of person, I'm sure, to others. So this was what I will always think of as Carl's prayer. Let us pray. Life is short and precious, and we do not have too much time to gladden the hearts of those who travel the way with us. So be swift to love, and make haste to be kind. And may the blessing of the one who made us, who loves us, and who travels with us, be upon you and those you love dearly this day.